When someone in your family is going through depression, it's hard to know what to say, and I said everything wrong. I'm Sam. Our family went through it, and I just kept saying, come on, let's get it together. The thing I should have been saying is, let's get you to the center, a place of hope. It's a place for you or a place for someone you love who's struggling with depression, anxiety, trauma, eating disorders. So many success stories. It's personal to me. They've actually saved the lives of people I love. If you felt like, I don't know what to do to dig out of this really dark place, and you've tried everything and you can't think of what to do next, make a phone call right now. Call the Center, a Place of Hope.
Hey, this is Dr. Tim Clinton, president of the American Association of Christian Counselors. If you or someone you love is in a tough spot, stuck, maybe in need of serious help, someone to talk to, you need somebody, I want you to write down this number for the Center, a Place of Hope. The number is 888-726-8125. That number again, 888-726-8125. I think if you write that number down, you're going to be glad you did. I have referred a number of people, a great number of people, to this ministry for special mental health care. They're outstanding. I can give them highest praise. That number again, 888-726-8125. Speak to our colleagues, the admissions team at the Center, a Place of Hope. Asking for help is hard. Finding help shouldn't be, especially Christ-centered help. Our friends at A Place for Hope, they're here to help. I hope you'll call today, and may God bless you.
Welcome to Life, Love, Faith, and Family, a production of the American Association of Christian Counselors. And on behalf of our hosts, Dr. Tim Clinton and his son, Zach, thanks for listening. If you enjoyed today's broadcast and want to help AACC equip the church and provide Christian mental health care to those in need, visit AACCFoundation.org to donate. Your gift will ensure that this program and your station remain on the air. Now, let's join our host, Zach Clinton.
Thanks, Jim. Hey, everybody. Welcome back into Life, Love, Faith, and Family. I'll be your host today, Zach Clinton. Today, we have an incredible conversation. Going to be unpacking a wonderful testimony from lead pastor of Victory Church right here in Tulsa, Oklahoma. His name is Paul Doherty. Paul, welcome to the show, my friend.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about life growing up here in Tulsa.
Okay, so we have a joke that this is Tulsa-Rusalem. It's like the... It is the Jerusalem of Christianity in America. It's just a beautiful city with a lot of great faith stories. Mm. We're sitting right now on campus at Oral Roberts University. Across the street is our church, Victory Christian, yes, School and Church and Bible College. But Tulsa is, there's so many churches. I mean, every block is a church, which is similar to probably Dallas or Nashville, yeah, or
definitely
where your neck of the woods. Yeah. But this city has so much rich faith. If you've ever heard of Rhema, Kenneth Hagin, T.L. Osborne, some of these like generals of the faith that are now in heaven, but they wrote hundreds of books on the Holy Spirit, on faith, on doing things, you know, God's way. There's just so much great history in this city of generals that started churches, Bible schools that have sent out people all over the world. And so, growing up here, growing up in a pastor's home has been definitely a journey and an adventure of faith for me.
Dude, I got to ask this before we really dive into the meat of the conversation, too. I saw a post that you made on Instagram recently, Elevation Worship Tour. You guys were in the big arena, and you,
yes,
said there was like a full circle moment with your daughter, Ellie, yes, as you were singing, I Want to See a Victory.
Yes.
Share that, please.
Okay, so 2019, I got a phone call from Pastor Stephen, who had become a friend of mine. I always like looked up to this guy, and I listened to all of his sermons and stuff, and he had preached for us a couple times, gave me his number, and we stayed in touch. And all of a sudden, he calls me one week when he's like not feeling it, not wanting to preach, and just needed a break, needed like a week off. And And I didn't want to tell him no, right. But our due date for our baby was that weekend. So I was like, what do I say to Pastor Stephen right now? Do I tell him no because this chance may not come back around again? And I was like, who gets invited to speak at Elevation? It's a rare opportunity. Right. And it was like so out of the blue. I was like, I can't believe he's asking me. And, you know, said it on the phone. Hey, it's going to be a big weekend. He said, historically in the past, all the services are packed on this weekend. It was in August or first week of September. He was first week of September. And he was telling me, he was like, this is a huge weekend. So now he's like selling it on me. And I'm like, okay, I'll be there. And I get off the phone and Ashley's like, our baby is due this weekend. I was like, I said, I will catch the first flight out of Charlotte after that 11 a.m. service, which would get me home to Tulsa by 7 p.m. We were looking online. I was like, can you wait till 7? Can you wait till 8? She was like, I will do my best, but if this baby starts coming, I'm not waiting for you. And you're going to have to show up as fast as you can out of Charlotte. I was like, okay, I will. I'll leave if I have to. So sure enough, you know, I go preach, and that night, thankfully she didn't have the baby on Sunday night, I get home, we're in the house, mm-hmm. She goes into labor at midnight, we rush up to the hospital, and she has the baby Monday morning, so I had only been home for about 4 hours before she had the baby, and yeah, we were in the hospital, and we were singing the song that they had just released that weekend as a single, mm-hmm. I'm Gonna See a Victory. Yes. And so in the hospital, I'm wearing my shirt that they gave me, you know, for preaching. They gave me one of their worship shirts, and it was I'm Gonna See a Victory. And so we're singing it, and it was such a special moment. Well, then this week, they're in town, yes. And they packed out the BOK Center, which was awesome. Anytime I walk into that arena, I always imagine, what would it look like for us to do a worship night here? Mm. So to come in and see 13,000 people worshiping Jesus. Wow. And I'm holding Ellie, who's now 5 years old, on my shoulders, and we're singing that song. And I took this video, I posted on social. I was like, man, I didn't even think about this, but because we have five kids, and yeah. Not all five were like ready for me to bring them to that concert on Wednesday night. We had some meltdowns at our house, and they all wanted to go, but they were all acting up, and so I only took two. I took the oldest, and I took Ellie, not even thinking about the connection. And so my oldest son is 11, Ellie's 5, and I'm holding her on my shoulders. And I was like, wow, full circle moment. Wow. She was born when this song came out.
Wow.
And here I am standing. So I told Pastor Stephen, he thought that was pretty cool.
I want to pause because I want to dive even deeper to an audience member out there who might be struggling with their mental and emotional health in this moment. I've often heard it said that suicide, at the end of the day, people who are suicidal, they don't want to end their life. Mm. They just want to end their pain. They don't even hate their life. They just hate their life the way that it is. Paul, speak to the person out there who maybe is struggling in that state. What can they be doing? Just a practical first step as we keep unpackaging this conversation.
One, there's always hope. So don't listen to the lie of the enemy that says there's no hope or your only option is to end it. There's always hope. With Jesus, there's always hope. There's always hope for a turnaround. But before things turn around in the physical, things have to turn around in your mental state. And if things were to turn around physically for you right now and get really good, but your mind never got good, it doesn't matter how good it gets out here. Your mind has to get better first. And that's what I had to realize is if my mind doesn't get better, even if the next day all my problems got solved, my mind would still be miserable.
Yes.
And so you can live in a palace and mentally be in a prison. Mm-hmm. You can be in a prison and mentally be in a palace. You have to win on the inside. So I just say to whoever's listening out there, take control back of your mind. Go talk to a counselor. Unpack the pain. If you don't have the money to go to a counselor, talk to a good friend. Find somebody to open up to. And ask, go to church. This is my encouragement, is to people who are dealing with depression, you need to get out of isolation. You need to go to physically, like, don't just attend church online. Go to a physical location. Find a connect group. Find a group of people that you can open up to and process with, a discipleship class. And it might even be a small, you know, a place that you're not used to. But go somewhere. Go and find some people that are in the faith that are going to pray with you, listen to your story, not judge you, and walk with you into victory.
Paul, for a second here, as we keep unpackaging this, you know, as I'm thinking about just the mental and emotional health and the state we're in as a country, my dad often says that we're not in a mental health crisis anymore. We're in a mental health disaster. Mm. We're continuing to see skyrocketing numbers, the rates of, you know, depression, anxiety, addiction, suicide. All of these things are at a level that honestly we've never seen before.
Yes.
And I'm just thinking, you know, how in the world did we get to this place? Like, how have we gotten here? And I want to ask you, as now the lead pastor of Victory Church, like, what are you seeing? What are you hearing in people, like, that depth of brokenness? But also, what do you believe are some of the contributing factors that have gotten us here?
I mean, I think COVID was a big one. I think that one just totally messed up so many people.
Yeah.
I had to go back to counseling after COVID just to get like my mind back to working normal because it was such a on overdrive, so much adrenaline during that season. Mm. Our church didn't shut down. So whether you shut down or you didn't shut down, there was mental effects of every decision that was made. But yeah, I think that's a big one. I also think just screens have messed up people. Like I think the increase of the iPhone and social media and TV and so much of that, like our kids are begging all the time for Nintendo time. And my wife and I have talked about like we are going to draw a line in the sand on how much they get to play the Nintendo, take our iPhones. Mm. We've decided like what age we actually want them to have a phone. Our 11-year-old is upset that a lot of his friends have an iPhone. He doesn't. And we're like, no, we're not giving you one until we feel at peace about it. Yeah. And we're not at peace about it right now because the research shows like this is not the healthiest thing for an 11-year-old to have all the time. And so anyways, I think that's been a huge contributing factor. And then, yeah, just the for young people, I do think there is a continual growing pressure to be somebody, to find your value in what people think about you, what they say about you, what they comment and like and subscribe to your YouTube channel and, you know, follow you on whatever. Or like people are finding their identity in so many other things connected to what people have to say about them. And I'm like, that's adding to the anxiety and the fear and the insecurity and the depression and the suicidal thoughts. We just had a girl on this campus take her life, a 20-year-old girl, very sad, jumped from the top of a building. And it all came down to battling the depression of feeling not worthy in the eyes of people.
I will never forget, you know, it's a big question that I get all the time because of who my dad is and following in his footsteps, which you can speak to this too, Paul. But I think it bleeds perfectly into what you were just saying about like comparison, because ultimately that is like comparing then myself to my dad. I remember one of my dearest friends and mentors, though, he told me once, he said, "Zach, you're most like your dad when you're not trying to be like him." And I was like, that's really good, because I could never be a better version of Tim Clinton than Tim Clinton. But I can be the best version of Zach Clinton every day. And so my dad has left behind this godly legacy 100%, and it's something that I admire. It's something that I revere. But I think the big thing for me is stewarding what he's left, not trying to like earn it or prove my worth or my value to other people or live up to an expectation or a standard, but just, again, steward it. Because that's God's grace, that God honestly gave me a dad like that, that has left that behind for me. And so I'm like, you know what? I'm going to just steward it to the best of my ability. Paul, speak to that for you too, because, I mean, following your dad's footsteps, you can speak right to it.
Well, my mom actually gave me a pair of my dad's shoes after he died. And she was like, here's his shoes. And I tried wearing his shoes because we have the same size foot. And I did wear his shoes for a solid couple of years. And I did say from stage, I was like, I can't do it. Like, I can't be him.
Yeah.
He was his own guy.
Yeah.
But I can be me. I can be the best version of me. I can be a second-rate Billy Joe, but I can be a first-rate Paul David Daugherty. And so, yeah, I just started. And funny thing is, someone gave me a pair of Chelsea boots, and they said, stop wearing your dad's shoes. Start wearing your own.
Wow.
And, yeah, I started wearing my own shoes. I started finding my own voice and preaching and leading our church without this fear of like, what would he do if he was here?
Mm-hmm.
How would he say this? Yeah. How would he preach this? What are his thoughts? And it was like, I need to stop asking what are his thoughts and start seeking in what has God called me to do? Because every pastor has a different style and way of doing it. And it doesn't mean it's wrong. You know, I look at Stephen Furtick. He's doing things different than how Mike Todd would do it. Mike Todd's doing it different than how, you know, whoever else out there would do it, whether it's Darius Daniels or whoever. Like, there's so many pastors out there that just have different styles, different voices. And I found the freedom once I realized I don't have to wear his shoes. I don't have to be him. There are some natural connections to how people go, your dad used to do that, and it's me being myself. And I'm like, okay, good. Well, that's not me trying to be him. That's just his imprint on my life.
That's right.
This past week, we were finishing up our, we just built a big, like 50,000 square foot athletic facility. And it was a huge victory for us because we were raising money for this for 4 years. And it was not like, we were halfway done. And we're a church that does things cash basis, debt free. That was like my parents' conviction. And I felt when I stepped in, I'm going to keep that conviction. My mom was like, Paul, you don't have to do that. You can go to the bank. And I was like, no, I want to keep us debt free. I want to keep us out of debt. I had seen stories in my lifetime here at ORU where debt almost closed the doors down of this university. And so I was like, I'm not doing anything in debt, and we're going to build on a cash basis. Well, praise God, we've had some millionaire givers in the last couple of years that have just stepped up and literally written a check for $1 million, which my dad prayed for that, never saw that in his lifetime, and we're seeing that. And so there are things about his seeds that produced a harvest that I'm seeing today, but then there's things about my seeds that are producing a harvest for my children someday. And so this athletic building won't serve me because I'm no longer a student at the school, but I once was. Now my five kids are getting to use that athletic building. They're playing basketball. It's turf. It's football. We went in there and threw the football. I was like tearing up because I was like, this is what my dad used to do with me when I was little. He would walk me out on the land that our church building sits on, and it was just an old cow pasture right across the street from Oral Roberts University. Walmart was down here, a cow pasture right here. And we bought that land as a church. And when I was a little boy, he said, what do you see? And I said, I see grass. I see cow poop. I see trash. I see dirt hills. And he would say, I see a church someday. I see a school someday. I see a computer lab over there, because computers were a big deal in the 90s. He was like, we're going to get a computer lab. And we're going to get that internet here. And we're, you know, he's like, we're going to have a gymnasium and a track over there. And one day we'll have a football field. And he was teaching me as a young boy, like, vision. You got to see it in here before you see it out there. Well, now I'm doing that with my kids. We're walking out there and we're walking around this athletic. And this guy drives up to me and he gets out of his truck. He's like, you remind me of your dad. And I was like, why? And he goes, because your dad did exactly what you're doing right now. I was like, he did? And I was like, oh yeah, he did do this. And he was like, also, your dad was involved in everything at the ministry. He had his hand in everything. He wasn't just in his office with the church. He was involved in the school. And he was like, I like seeing you involved in all these areas. I was like, I guess it's just in my blood. But I think that's a side of the legacy, is we're putting things in our kids' blood that I think is going to naturally flow out, you know, someday, 20 years from now.
That then leads me to this kind of question. I think something that might be able to wrap up our time together today with this is, to the person out there, I've heard it said that hope doesn't produce change, habits do, right? We have to, in a sense, bridge the gap from praying and preparing, right? We're going to pray that God would do all that he can do and only what he can do, while at the same time, we're going to prepare and steward what he has blessed us with the master key that he has allowed us to unlock within ourselves. Yes. So for you, I'm interested, are there any practices or processes that you walk through on a daily basis to renew your mind? Because it's a daily, decision by decision, moment by moment battle, Paul. 100%. What's that look like in your life for the listener out there?
So reading my Bible sounds so practical and spiritual and pastoral, but daily time in the Word, daily time in the Word. That is like my main habit, brushing my teeth, reading my Bible, and taking a shower, you know, but also confessing the Word of God out loud and getting it. In fact, my car ride every morning is like, I'll listen to chapters in the Bible, then I'll do confessions, and I lead my boys because I'm taking them to school every day. My daughters, one of them comes to school. 3 days a week. But when she's in the car with me and the boys, she knows we're going to do confessions. And so I'll go, okay, repeat after me. I am a mighty man of God. I'll say to her, you're a mighty woman of God. I am loved. I am valuable. I am called. I am God's child. I put on the helmet of salvation. And it's, for me, it's a habit to get my mind and my mouth headed in the right direction at the start of the day. I think people need to start their day off speaking the word over themselves.
Yes.
It sounds so like maybe elementary, but I think that could help them carry a day of joy, of peace.
Yes.
Because the rest of their day, they're going to work, they're going to eat, they're going to maybe listen to podcasts, they're going to maybe call somebody, but just start your day off with some confessions and with the word of God, you know, a chapter or two from Psalms or Proverbs or the Gospels. And I always do an Old Testament couple chapters and a New Testament couple chapters, and then confessions. Those are the two main habits. And then habits that I formed that are weekly, I wouldn't say they're daily, weekly is a touch point with someone in my life that's holding me accountable. Mm-hmm. So I would say a touch point for anyone out there that is not just when you're struggling, even after you have victory, you're making a conversation weekly, if not daily, with somebody that you are talking to about your life. So I have a guys group, and I'll open up and say, hey, this week has been hard, or this week I have just been so mad at, you know, my kids, or my wife and I got into a dumb argument this week. Pray for me. I'm battling feelings of like frustration and, again, inadequacy. Like, here I am a pastor and I'm still not 100% where I want to be. Iron sharpens iron. And vulnerability, being honest, like recognizing we're never so professional that we don't still deal with our human fleshly stuff. So
what I appreciate about you, Paul, is that you're a lead pastor who's willing to go there and talk about mental health and emotional health, because that's not always seen. It's not always valued, right? Sometimes I feel like the church can over-spiritualize things, like just read more, just pray more, right? It'll all go away. But it's like, man, talking about counseling, talking about vulnerability, as well as standing on the foundation of your faith. Like you said, being in the Word, spending time in the Lord's presence, really being able to manifest these truths over your life and in your mind constantly.
Yes, sir.
That's what this is all about. Paul, man, we're grateful for you. As we wrap up, I'd be remiss not to ask. So Victory Church, Mind Games, all the other resources, what's the one-stop shop or the website all of our audience can go to?
Yeah, they can go to pauldougherty.org. They can find that. They could find me on social media, and the website's right there. Honestly, probably the easiest website to find everything is victory.com.
Victory.com.
Yeah, that's like five letters that you type in. Wait, V-I-C-T-O-R-Y. There's seven letters. I'm still learning my math. Thank you, guys.
Hey, Paul, I know we're fighting the clock, but on behalf of my dad and myself and all of us here at Life, Love, Faith, and Family, thank you so much for joining us, my friend.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Life, Love, Faith, and Family, a production of the American Association of Christian Counselors. If you enjoyed today's broadcast and want to help equip the church to provide Christian mental health care, visit aaccfoundation.org. Your donation ensures this program and your station stay on the air. On behalf of our co-hosts, Dr. Tim Clinton and his son, Zach, this is Jim Kress. We look forward to having you with us again next time. May God bless you.
If someone in your family has depression or anxiety, it's hard to know what to do. We went through that. I'm Sam. The center is a place of hope. Lives are being healed. God is changing families.
Coming to the center, it's just life-altering. My relationship with my husband, my relationship with my family.
Struggling to keep it all together, or no one knows, or you're hiding things, or you feel like you've hit some crisis.
It's amazing to think that there could be so much change.
Man, I'm so grateful for the center. It's so helpful for me, and I'm so hopeful.
The center, a place of hope. Call today. A lot of people are surprised that insurance can help cover this.
Dive in, give yourself all to it. Watch what happens.
Call the Center, a place of hope, right now.
Hey, this is Dr. Tim Clinton, president of the American Association of Christian Counselors. If you or someone you love is in a tough spot, stuck, maybe in need of serious help, someone to talk to, you need somebody, I want you to write down this number for the Center, a place of hope. The number is 888- 888- 726-8125. That number again, 888-726-8125. I think if you write that number down, you're going to be glad you did. I have referred a number of people, a great number of people, to this ministry for special mental health care. They're outstanding. I can give them highest praise. That number again, 888-726-8125. Speak to our colleagues, the admissions team at the center, a place of hope. Asking for help is hard. Finding help shouldn't be, especially Christ-centered help. Our friends at A Place for Hope, they're here to help. I hope you'll call today, and may God bless you.
Asking for help is hard. Finding help shouldn't be. At Christian Care Connect, our mission is to connect those seeking help with a provider who offers the faith-based care they need. At CCC, we offer free mental health assessments for the user to help gauge their psychological and emotional well-being, as well as free self-help blog resources to help educate readers on topics such as depression, anxiety, and more. Christian Care Connect bridges the gap between those seeking help and the caregivers offering it, fostering connections rooted in clinical excellence. If you're looking for help, it's closer than you think. And if you're a provider who's ready to offer help, this site is for you too. Visit ChristianCareConnect.com to find the help you need or get listed as a provider. That's ChristianCareConnect.com.